Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, we're going to talk all about periods again, but if you missed episode 21, you probably want to listen to that first before jumping into this one, because in that one, we go over the four phases of your menstrual cycle from when you get your period to when you get your period again, including ovulation, etc. We talk about the hormonal fluctuations and what influences that, and then we do delve into what's a normal versus abnormal period and what you can start to do about it, or things that you can look at for some testing ideas. But we're jumping really into the testing today. So in terms of your period, we're going to talk about ways to track your cycle without getting a blood test, urine, or saliva test. So things you can do at home now if you're thinking about trying to have a baby, or if you just want to know where your hormones are at, these are really valuable too. And then we'll delve into the hormone testing that you can actually get done. Toni and I love Chinese medicine too, so we really want to discuss the Chinese medicine philosophy and how it relates to your menstrual cycle and PMS, so hopefully you find that fascinating. And then there's something called the four phases of creation that Kate Northrup talks about a lot. So it's the time of your monthly cycle when there's different energies, different times to go out in public, different times to do more analytical work, and even how to exercise or eat during different phases of your cycle. So I think you'll find that interesting as well. But let's jump into the meat of the episode, if you will. And we're going to talk about tracking your cycle. So a lot of people, when they're trying to get pregnant, are told, well, mostly by naturopaths probably, to track their basal body temperature. And a lot of people cringe when they hear that. They're like, oh, I got to take my temperature every morning. But it's so valuable because what you actually do is you take your first morning temperature. So right when you wake up, you have your thermometer on the nightstand with either your app on your phone or a piece of paper to write it down. But take your temperature, write it down, and then do that every day of your cycle for at least several cycles. And what happens is after ovulation, your temperature actually rises by 0.5 degrees Celsius. So usually 12 to 24 hours after you ovulate. So you want to make sure you know when you're ovulating. So it'll tell you, you know, when to have intercourse. Typically, people ovulate between day 10 and 17 of their menstrual cycle. So you could see that 0.5 temperature increase happen during any of those days. A lot of people just assume they're ovulating on day 14, but that's not usually the case. So that's one way to see what's happening with your hormones. If you don't see that elevation in temperature and it's supposed to stay up, it still might fluctuate, obviously, from day to day, then you might have low progesterone, you're not ovulating. Some people will also look at their cervical fluid or check their cervical fluid. So around ovulation, it actually changes to an egg white consistency, like a raw egg white consistency. So it's see-through, sticky. That allows the sperm to get into the vaginal tract and potentially fertilize an egg. And your cervix, you can become aware of it. It actually shifts throughout your cycle. So during or around ovulation, it moves up the vaginal tract and it changes consistency. Like if you press it, it's not as hard as it normally is. It becomes more like the tip of your nose, kind of like rubbery. So that's another good way to assess where you are in your cycle. And Toni, did you want to talk about some other ways to know what's going on?
And I just want to even just kind of reiterate like how much information and how empowering and kind of instructive it can be to do something like your basal body temperature and to pay attention to your cervical fluid, to really connect with your body and to really see where you're at, can give you some really great information about what is going on with your cycles. And in addition to, actually just paying attention to when you're having your periods. But going back to even figuring out when you're ovulating, if you're ovulating, I definitely look at the basal body temperature and, things like the cervical fluid changes, the changes in the position of cervix that are, they're simple tools and they are the most accurate kind of measurements and links to really look at if you're ovulating. You could use LH strips or those ovulation strips to measure your luteinizing hormone or LH in your urine that typically rises anywhere from 12 to 36 hours before you ovulate. It's kind of that surge, that hormonal surge that stimulates ovulation to happen. But it's not that is 100% linked with ovulation. You can have that surge in luteinizing hormone without ovulation happening. So, using those strips isn't necessarily 100%. Even things like progesterone ovulation kits that measure your progesterone levels, your progesterone levels typically start to increase, 24 to 36 hours after ovulation. But you may still ovulate, but have lower levels of progesterone. So again, that may not be super accurate as well.
Mm-hmm. I know it's really good to know your body. And as you said, Tony, the cervical fluid and position and BBT or basal body temperature is really key, but these are good adjuncts. So you want to do more than one of these when you're tracking your cycle. And we're even finding more people are tracking their cycle, not just when they're getting pregnant, but when they're going through perimenopause too. So you'll know what's happening and then know what the root cause is of your symptoms. There's a lot more tracking methods out there. I've never used or seen anyone use different fertility monitors like the Clear Blue or the Daisy, but that's something you could look into. I haven't seen anyone have their saliva looked at under a microscope, but it does some sort of ferning. It looks like, a little bit of a leaf or a fern because of the increase in salt in your saliva before you ovulate. So that's just a cool little tidbit there. There are coming out with some newer monitors to detect when you're ovulating, but who knows the effectiveness of those. But just to let you know what's coming on the horizon, there's some monitors to measure the electrolytes in your saliva, which will fluctuate throughout your cycles. And I read something about some vaginal sensors to detect ovulation. So I definitely need to learn more about that. But the key is to, I know, right? We're moving into the future for sure. But the key is to know your body, right? Yeah, we don't need all these bells and whistles. It's really being in tune with what's going on. And at the very basic, you want to track when you get your period. I know so many women, and maybe you do too, Tony, that come in and they're like, yeah, I think it comes pretty regularly, usually at the end of the month. And so I say at the very least, if you could just put day one in your Google Calendar, and then when you get your period, so that would be the first day of flow. And then the next month when you get it again, put day one. So at the very least, do that so you know the length of your menstrual cycle. If you can track the details, even better. And I know there's some great apps out there. Tony, you have a favorite one, right, that you like to use?
Yeah, my favorite is Period Tracker. I think it was just one of the first apps that came out. So, having a smartphone, it's just so easy because we're used to having our phone around. So it's easy to kind of input that information, and something like Period Tracker is again, a great kind of simple tool where you can kind of look at that scheduling. There's an app called MyFlow, which looks really interesting that I most likely will play around with, because it looks at tracking your period, but also giving more information and kind of giving guidance around the idea of how our hormones can change, can change our energy levels, our creativity levels. We'll definitely talk more about that. Even the idea of different levels of exercise and different eating habits that are really supportive of our body's function that changes depending on where we are in our monthly cycle. So, you know, something, you know, as simple as that app that can be a tracker, but can also really give you back information and give you feedback on really how to support your body in a healthier way is again, really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. There's some great tech tools out there. I remember using Fertility Friend. They have a website and they now have an app too. So you can actually enter in your temperature and it'll map out on a chart what's happening with your temperature so you can see when you ovulate. So that's another good option as well. But I'm pretty old school. I feel like I get overwhelmed by tech a lot, although I do want to check out the MyFlow app. I can't believe I haven't already. But I have a document that's like a perimenopausal symptom tracker and it covers everything. So you have like several pages on a month. They're very small spaces and you just rate, you know, your flow, what sort of PMS or symptoms you're getting, what's your sleep like, etc. So I have like sheets and sheets of that. I have given up on that recently. It was a big commitment, but I think I could look into the app right now. And if it's not too overwhelming, I'll dive into that too. But definitely check out some apps, but at the very least, track it in your Google Calendar because we need to know what's going on. So anything else about tracking we should talk about?
You know, for every woman, it's going to be different. You know, whether you go really simple or really more complex, or whether you're going old school with, you know, filling out a form or, you know, having kind of a paper chart or a spreadsheet chart, or actually using an app. The great thing is there's a number of different options, so that's not like one size fits all. It's not like there's only one thing that you can do to really pay attention to what's going on in your body. It's about figuring out, you know, what is going to be the best thing for you, what you can take on, and like you said, what won't be too overwhelming or feel like more work for you to have to do.
Totally. Yeah. You don't want to jump in the first month you're tracking every single symptom and then you're like, forget this, I'm not tracking anything. So what's consistent, like what can you be consistent with and regular with is the best one for you.
For sure. And you may find even, you know, something like basal body temperature or ovulation or the different ovulation signs, you know, you may want to do it every single day, every single menstrual cycle, or you may want to do it, you know, for, you know, two or three cycles in a row and then take a break. And that's fine too.
Totally. Yeah, you can do it for a set period of time, get a sense, and you kind of know what's going on. If something changes, then you can start to track again.
Absolutely.
And just as a side note, Tony, I don't know if people know this, but so our hormones cycle obviously every month, of course, between 26 and 32 days, but male hormones cycle every 24 hours. So I think that's a fascinating fact. So their testosterone and cortisol are released highest, you know, first thing in the morning. They drop as the day goes on. So guys can get away with like similar exercise routines. You know, they might be able to get away with intermittent fasting every day, anytime of the month, any time of the year. Whereas females, we really need to tune into what's going on with our hormones. And we talked about this in episode 21, that you actually make an almost considered like an extra endocrine gland during the second phase of your cycle when you make what's called the corpus luteum, and that produces progesterone. So it's a temporary thing that's making hormones. So your needs for nutrition and carbohydrates go up because you need to fuel your body and also to build up that lining. So just as a little note, there's obviously no trackers like any period trackers for men because theirs goes through a daily cycle or a 24-hour cycle. Yeah.
And that's why using something like MyFlow is so intriguing, because the woman who created it, Elisa Viti, who also wrote the book Woman Code, really taps into this idea of our cycles and how the way you eat, the way you move your body from phase to phase of our menstrual cycle, you know, shifts. And if we're expecting to do the same thing every single day, every single day of the month, the same way, then we're not going to really support our functioning of our body, our productivity, our metabolism, all of these things. So it's you know, that kind of idea is really cool to kind of tap into.
Totally. And even looking at when we get into hormone testing, right? It really does matter the time of the month when you get that blood test, when you do that urine or saliva test. A lot of women come to me with blood test results, with hormone values, and it's not even recorded what day of the cycle it is, or they weren't told to go a certain day of the cycle. Like most people for blood work, if they're going for fertility, they usually go around day three. If someone is looking at hormones, you know, perimenopausally, or they want to catch what their progesterone levels are, you're going to want to do it the second half of the cycle when progesterone's supposed to be its highest, between, you know, day 19 and 21, if day one is the first day of flow. So we need to be aware of our cycle so then we can obviously track the hormone levels at various time points. And some people even do what's called cycle monitoring with urine or saliva. We'll get into the differences between all of these and the benefits and cons. But sometimes you need to capture hormone values throughout the month if your period is unpredictable, or it's really complicated, and just a snapshot during a day or two of your period isn't going to give us enough information.
Absolutely. And you know, in terms of talking about the kind of testing, yeah, you really want to be aware of what day you're testing on. And that's where, as naturopathic doctors, we give guidance to women to, you know, whether they are getting their hormones tested through blood or urine or saliva. There are better times depending on kind of what kind of information we want to get and what they're experiencing. There are better times of the month to look at. And yeah, you know, there are different labs that will, where you can do a monthly test, where you can test every 2 or 3 days what your hormone levels are like if you are having irregular cycles or can't predict when your period is. Because oftentimes if we're looking at kind of premenstrual issues, yeah, you want to look at the middle of your luteal phase of your menstrual cycle, or that's really kind of ideally around 7 days before you expect your next period. But if you don't know when your next period's coming, then how can you, you know, test that accurately?
For sure. Yeah. So we need that awareness. And then we always get a ton of questions, right? Like, which test is best? Should I get blood? Should I get urine? Mm-hmm. Should I get saliva? So there's no perfect test. Let's just put that out there. Tests give us different pieces of information to figure out the puzzle, right? There's some better than others. I like to explain. So blood is basically the highway for the hormones, right? So the hormones travel through the bloodstream like on a highway, and they're supposed to leave the highway or the bloodstream to have action at the tissue or organ level. So they can help, you know, with ovaries, with breast development, with vaginal tissue, with bone health, for example. But if you're taking a blood test, it's a snapshot of what's in the bloodstream, what's on the highway. So we don't know what's actually active at the tissue level. So the amazing thing about urine and saliva, so I'll start with saliva, you actually express some of the hormones into your saliva that have left the bloodstream, that are moving to have action at the tissue level. So that's pretty cool to think of. And then the urine is what's actually been processed and moving through your body. So it's definitely not in the bloodstream. It's come out of the bloodstream and had an effect. And then the urine test can even measure the breakdown products or the metabolites of your hormones, because that's how we excrete them. And you can break down hormones into more favorable ones, or you can break down hormones into less favorable ones that may increase the risk of DNA damage, possibly cancer, for example. So saliva gives you good active hormone levels, but it's a basic test. It doesn't measure the metabolites. It measures estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, and cortisol. Urine measures all of those plus their breakdown products. So how is your body handling them? So it's a really good test. But blood has benefits too, because you can actually measure something called sex hormone binding globulin, which can bind to hormones in your bloodstream. So then they definitely won't leave the highway or the bloodstream to have an action at the tissue level. So we use that test a lot. If we're looking at testosterone, you have to measure total testosterone and free testosterone and sex hormone binding globulin. And then you can do a calculation to actually see what's your true like free testosterone, which has the most action. And as females, yes, we can suffer from low testosterone symptoms too. So that's kind of the testing in a nutshell. I know that's a lot of information, but I'm sure Tony, there's some things you might want to add about that too.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially like talking about blood testing. Like I love saliva hormone testing, urine hormone testing, especially to really get a full picture of what's happening with all of these hormones, especially how they're all interconnected. How our estrogen can impact our testosterone, can impact our progesterone. Like it's, it really is, a whole web. So to look at all of that can be really fantastic in a urine test like Dutch or Qi. But there are aspects of our hormone health that we do need to look at blood testing. And, you were mentioning kind of the sex hormone binding globulin, but there's even, our thyroid hormones. That's where we look at, our thyroid function and our thyroid hormone production in our blood, looking at our thyroid stimulating hormone, our free T4, our free T3, even possible thyroid antibodies, as well as looking at our iron status. So especially if you have issues like heavy periods, there's a big link, unfortunately, a vicious cycle that you can get into with heavy periods and low iron. So we would want to know what your iron status is, what your hemoglobin levels are, your iron stores, your ferritin, but also even your circulating iron and your transferrin saturation, how saturated your blood is with iron. Those are really important things to look at because, something like having heavier periods or clots may not necessarily be a hormone issue, but it's more an iron issue. Also, what's really important is to look at vitamin D status, and that's a test that's done through the blood. Vitamin D is a pro-hormone, so it can be really involved in inflammatory issues, but also immune system issues too. So that would be something that you'd want to get tested in the blood, as well as looking at our blood sugar balance, because our blood sugar balance, our insulin response will absolutely play a role with different issues like PCOS, or different hormone issues as well. So you want to get that testing done through the blood as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of good options for blood testing that's not necessarily looking directly at hormones, but factors that, thyroid hormones, yes, but it's going to look at factors that will influence your actual hormone levels. And then for that FSH test, we do that in the blood too. So that can predict if, confirming if someone's going through menopause. So there's a time and a place for each of them, but you really need to understand what's going on with your cycle to then determine which route to take for testing. And it may involve tracking your cycle, as Tony said, over the whole month, tracking your urine, tracking your saliva, taking samples every few days. So a lot of options out there, but see your practitioner, your naturopath to figure out what's best for you.
Definitely. And as naturopathic doctors, often we'll have our patients go and see their family doctors or their gynecologists to get assessments that we're not able to look at, like ultrasounds and imaging to make sure that structurally things are healthy with the uterus, the endometrial lining, the ovaries as well. So that's also important to kind of pay attention to when we're talking about, lab testing for hormonal imbalances and issues with periods and menstrual cycles.
Definitely. So yeah, you can ask your doctor for some of those as well. So that covers what we wanted to talk about in terms of testing, but we wanted to shift gears and talk a little bit about traditional Chinese medicine, because Tony and I were both trained in this, and it's so fascinating to think of the body in this paradigm. In Chinese medicine, it's fairly complicated. We'll try to simplify it, but our different organs are impacted by various things like emotions, for example. So if you're feeling really irritated or anxious, that can impact your liver. If you're drinking a lot of alcohol or overindulging, so even your nutrition and diet can impact organs. So for example, the liver can be influenced by having one too many glasses of wine on the weekend. And a common symptom pattern we see in Chinese medicine is called liver stagnation. That's a common pattern of what PMS is in Western medicine. So in liver stagnation, your qi and your blood isn't moving or flowing properly because of the negative emotions, because of the diet, maybe not moving properly or exercising, or maybe you just feel stuck in your life too. That can contribute to that stagnation as well. And then the symptoms that can manifest in PMS include irritability and anger and anxiety. You can definitely have cramping too. So it's good to know what sort of emotion is dominant in your life on a daily basis. Are you eating well? Are you taking care of your body? Because that can impact the different organs in your system. So I really see a lot of people with liver stagnation in my practice. And for these people, it's like, okay, let's reduce the coffee. Let's reduce the alcohol. You might be type A personality. So let's try to tone it back. You know, you don't have to do everything yourself. And then working on using acupuncture, placed at strategic spots to help with that flow of your qi and your blood and to get that energy moving, as well as using liver supporting or liver detoxing herbs is really key too. So usually anyone that has hormonal imbalances, Tony will probably agree, we have to start with the foundations, right? Like sleeping well, eating well, exercising right for you during your cycle, not overindulging, and then dealing with stress and not taking too much on. But that's a common pattern I see in practice. And Tony, what about you from a Chinese medicine perspective? What do you see a lot of?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, thinking of liver stagnation can be really key because again, the PMS cramps can definitely be involved in that. And something that I always think about, especially in terms of the philosophy of kind of the flow of blood and qi with our menstrual cycles as women, something important to look at is kind of the impact of cold on our menstrual cycle and the function of our uterus, because again, that can impact that stagnation. As well as spleen qi deficiency is something that I talk to a lot of women about. And again, you know, it's kind of one of those things, especially with the spleen, it's like, how do you describe spleen qi deficiency when in Chinese medicine, the spleen isn't linked to our anatomical spleen, but in spleen qi, we're talking about how, you know, in Chinese medicine, the spleen actually supports the stomach to transform food into energy and to transport it through the body. So there, and the spleen also has the ability to or the function to hold blood in vessels, has a function involved for moving blood as well as digestion. So I definitely think about spleen qi deficiency for those women and who have changes in their digestion depending on where they are in their menstrual cycle, you know, where they go from being more constipated to having more kind of almost like diarrhea or loose stools. So, you know, that can definitely show up for women when, again, when there's that issue. And sometimes, again, women have kind of a combination of some of the liver stagnation with the spleen qi deficiency. What can, you know, impact our spleen qi is too many raw cold foods, more excessive alcohol intake, and as well as, you know, worry and anxiety is definitely associated with spleen and spleen qi deficiency as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a big one I see that impacts a lot of people is eating late at night. So that's when our spleen isn't active and people are eating in front of the TV, you know, right before they go to bed and they wake up and they have loose stools or diarrhea because their body couldn't process that food properly. So that's a common contributing factor. But like, yeah, you said, Tony, the raw food, the cold food, too much of it or too much of that in the winter can really tax that spleen energy. It's trying to digest that food. It's harder to digest cold, raw food. And if things are lightly steamed or cooked, then our body has an easier time. The spleen in Chinese medicine, the stomach in the Western medicine sense, has an easier time breaking down those foods. So even too many smoothies in the winter, too many raw salads, and then obviously the worry is a big one too for a lot of people. So it's important to figure out those contributing factors and then treat accordingly.
Yeah, definitely. You know, especially that combo of liver stagnation with spleen qi, you know, liver kind of being associated with overwork, stress, irritability, frustration, and then spleen being associated with anxiety, worry. Who isn't experiencing any of that in their lives?
Mm-hmm. And especially now, right? So right. A lot of people are getting worse PMS symptoms. And then there's also the worry, but also the overindulging. And Tony, I think for you and I, we're probably entering into the blood deficiency, right? So this is that low estrogen pattern with lighter flow. Some people will not be getting a regular flow. So blood is basically like a yin substance. It's considered like estrogenic almost. So as we get lower estrogen, then our periods become lighter, hence the blood deficiency. We can also be a little more, have a tendency for lightheadedness or dizziness or fatigue. And you can get a blood deficiency from having heavy periods in the past, low estrogen, possibly not getting the right nutrients in. So you really want to build up your blood through healthy sources of protein, of iron. A blood deficiency is common a lot after giving birth too, because you do lose a lot of blood. So in the Chinese medicine world, they recommend a lot of soups, broths, stews, cooked foods, things to nourish your body. If you like liver, you can tolerate it. You know, liver you can get in, bone broths, those are all really key as well.
Absolutely. You know, that the idea of the flow in Chinese medicine and again, things kind of moving downwards, especially when we're talking about menstrual flow, is another reason why oftentimes we'd like to think about, you know, using menstrual cups instead of, you know, things like pads or tampons, because menstrual cups will help to support that idea of that movement downward or that flow downward, instead of just being stopped by a pad or a tampon. And we'll definitely talk more about kind of, our experience, but, one of the reasons also why a lot of women are leaning towards more of the menstrual cups are even, you know, other negative effects of pads and tampons, but even, you know, just the waste that's created by pads and tampons. I mean, we are, if you're having a period every month, especially if your cycle is on the shorter side, over the years, it really adds up. There's the waste created by your pads and tampons, and then actually just having to buy the pads and tampons. So that's where, you know, using a menstrual cup, is a wonderful thing that a lot of women have, you know, turned to reduce some of this excess waste and excess resources that are going towards menstrual products.
A really good point. And I know a lot of people, many people have tried cups, but they've usually tried one and they're like, oh, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't fit properly. But we want to let you know about a website, and we'll put it in the show notes, called Put a Cup in It. So putacupinit.com. So there's so many different brands of menstrual cups. They're not always sold at the health food stores. You need to get a lot of them online. But based on if you've had a baby, you know, the positioning of your cervix, if one didn't fit you, can kind of look for another one that has better parameters for you. But it is a trial and an error process. So you got to find the right size for you. So if you've tried it once and it didn't work, go to putacupinit.com. We're not affiliated with them. I know it sounds like I am, but to try a different one, because it will save you money in the long term. It'll help your period and reduce that stagnation. And then you're also protecting the environment. So don't give up if you've had a bad experience.
Definitely. And, you know, if you're kind of interested in looking at more information, although there really isn't a lot of research, unfortunately, that's been done on menstrual cups versus tampons versus pads. A resource that you could look at is, there's a great book called The Vagina Bible by Dr. Jen Gunther. And, she's a Canadian gynecologist, and she's put some of this information in. So if you're wanting to get, some medical advice, that's based on, the limited research that's there, that's another great resource to look at too.
Good to know, Tony. Yeah, check that out for sure. And now we'll move into kind of more of a philosophical idea about your period and how to tap into and actually I shouldn't say philosophical, because they're starting to study it now. And it's actually pretty interesting to note. So this is called like cycle syncing, the phases of your cycle, when to do what. And the actual US soccer team taps into their cycle syncing. So their coaches are aware of when the women have their periods or when they're ovulating, the different phases, and they tailor their nutrition plan, their workout plan accordingly. So we can talk a little bit about what that looks like, because we change throughout the month. I have so many people say, oh yeah, I started out and I was exercising every day and eating well, but then, right before my period, I was so exhausted, I couldn't do it. I just wanted to pig out, and then I didn't restart again. But that can be a sign that, yeah, you are going through those cyclical changes. Maybe there's some hormone imbalances, but really different phases of our cycle will dictate what we would do best at and what we would do worst at. So when you think about the menstrual phase of your cycle, so when you have your period, this is typically when we're tired, we want to rest, we want to sleep more. This is when, do you feel like that too, Tony, when you get it? When you get your period?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
I know.
Definitely.
Yes. So it's a time where you're not going to want to do, with your flow, you're not going to want to do like any high intensity interval training, but maybe right after your period's done, you're going to be in a phase of, slower metabolism. So you can actually get away with eating a little bit less and it not impacting you so much. You might be able to do a little bit of intermittent fasting, without feeling totally drained after your period, has ended. I should say. And then during this time, you can have a good, high intensity interval training workout or something a little bit more intense. But this is also the time when you want to look within and reflect on what's going on, what's working in your life, what's not, getting in tap with your intuition. So it's good to be aware of that. So during the menstrual phase, you're resting. And then as that follicular phase is starting, you might not be overdoing it with food because your metabolism's a little bit slower and you're doing a little bit more intense workouts. But as you're approaching ovulation, you might start to feel some bursts of creativity. You might want to be out and active. So those are really interesting things to note. Tony, did you want to talk about the ovulation, or do you want me to keep going?
Oh yeah. Well, it's interesting that, again, kind of before ovulation and after ovulation, a lot of women, again, feel differently. That desire before ovulation to kind of be out there, having a lot of creative ideas, really wanting to connect with people, even around ovulation, having more heightened communication skills, and even like a magnetism towards you can happen. And then after ovulation, there can be more of a decline in physical energy, and the idea of really turning inward, doing more nesting, doing more administrative tasks, more detail-oriented tasks that feel like priorities, kind of slowing down instead of kind of that high physical energy that you would feel before ovulation. So those are kind of some of the shifts that can happen. And it even kind of links with the idea of our cycles being kind of synced to the cycle of the moon. Again, the moon and the different phases of the moon are linked to, the pull of the tides, moving of fluids, moving of salt water. And again, our bodies are made of a high percentage of salt water. So that idea that the moon phases will impact our flow as well really does make sense, especially, especially if you aren't using any kind of hormonal birth control as well, because that can really impact things if you're taking an external source of hormones. But, the moon cycles can be linked to those different phases of the cycles where a new moon is often associated with the menstrual phase of that looking in, reflecting on what's working, and kind of doing any course correction. And then the full moon being connected with our ovulation time, that time of heightened communication and magnetism happening too. Mm-hmm. And something to that I always like to kind of think about is, again, every woman is different. So while these are great ideas to really pay attention to, and again, it's not just talk. I mean, when high level athletes are using these kind of ideas, you know that there is some basis to it. It's not some like new agey stuff happening here, especially when the U.S. women's soccer team is using it to become world champions. You know that there's actually the results and the evidence there. But every woman's going to be different. So it's not like, okay, I have to menstruate during, the new moon and I have to be ovulating during the full moon, or you have to feel, those differences in your energy and communication and all of those things that we've been talking about. Again, these are kind of generalizations, but every woman is going to fit in these ideas a little bit differently. And it's really important to pay attention to again, how you are experiencing your cycles. And that's why I really like, Kate Northrup has some different resources that way, so that you can pay attention to how you're feeling. This idea of these kind of different phases of creation and how our menstrual phases are associated with different energy levels and moon cycles. I was first introduced by Kate Northrup's mother, Christiane Northrup, who's a famous gynecologist in the States. She wrote her book, Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom, which really made a shift in how we look at women's health. So it's so fantastic to see her daughter Kate kind of taking this on and really supporting women to take in this information, and other women really expanding on these ideas, so that we can use these ideas to really support how we feel, support our lives, support our metabolism, support our weight and our energy and all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really good point, because we need to be aware of our cycle and aware how do we feel during the different phases. A lot of times we just try to push through. We're like, well, I have to do these intense workouts every day of the month. I know myself, I want to do more yoga, more Pilates, less intense workouts before my period. And yeah, leading up to my period, I have all these ideas. I might be brainstorming a ton. And then it's no wonder around ovulation, we want to get out there. We want to be social because we're more supposed to be most fertile at that time. And our whole goal is to procreate, right? So we want to attract a mate. So we want to be out there in the public. We want to attract people. And they've even done studies where men are attracted to female more when they're ovulating. And if someone's on the birth control, they're not ovulating. So sometimes that effect can be blunted a little bit. And you're still beautiful on the birth control. Actually, your skin's probably a lot clearer than some people that are. But it's pretty interesting to know what's going on with the hormones and that attraction ability, if you will. So use it to your advantage. And hopefully this will become commonplace, like in the workplace. People will know, when is the best time for you to do a presentation? When is the best time for you to do more analytical work? And if you have your own business, then you could start to tap into these phases to maximize your productivity, efficiency, and focus, instead of trying to push through and just do the same thing every day and get, mad at ourselves if we're not able to keep that pace up.
Yeah, I think that is the key thing, is like managing your expectations and not feeling bad about not having the kind of energy physically or wanting to shift gears or not feeling as creative. It really is about tapping into your strengths and using your strengths so that we don't necessarily think about, letting ourselves down or just seeing our weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it for sure.
Yeah. And a lot of us will already kind of experiencing these kind of phases throughout the year because, you can think about the year lining up to the different phases of the menstrual cycle too. You know, winter being like our menstrual phase, spring being like the follicular phase where we do have more high physical energy, summer being more of the ovulatory phase where we're wanting to get out there, connect with community, communicate more, have that magnetism, and then fall being more of the luteal phase where we're starting to get a more of a decline in our physical energy and we're starting to kind of turn inward and do that nesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so fascinating, right? And I think we all go through those cycles. Winter, people want to hibernate. Spring, it's like, let's do this. I have the world by its tails. And, it's interesting how that cycles through. And like Tony said, well, if you're not getting a period, then your hormones or your tendencies still might cycle according to the moon cycle too. So right. You can pay attention to the moon cycle and see how do you feel during the different phases of the moon and then get a sense if it's what your natural rhythm is within that.
Absolutely, for sure. So are we ready to switch gears completely now and instead of talking about our periods and our menstrual cycles and talk about your super mom moment, Lisa?
Sure, I will definitely share. I'm proud of myself for this one because Stuart's home now. Preschool is still closed. Pete and I are trying to get work done and the house was getting really, really dirty. We normally have a house cleaner come every 3 weeks. So we still have to do some cleaning and tidying, but she's obviously not coming right now. So I was thinking, how am I going to fit in a cleaning session? And it was a rainy day. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get Stuart involved in this. Like, we're going to do it together. So we started on the top floor and I brought the vacuum up and I started to vacuum and he was fascinated watching me. And then I got him involved. He started using the vacuum hose to vacuum under the bed, for example, under the drawers. So he really loved that. He got so into it. And then we were dusting together. He had the little duster. We were spraying vinegar and water and cleaning different surfaces. And then I was able to do a quick bathroom clean, although I couldn't do the tub with him in the background because that would take too long. But I got a good chunk of cleaning done and it was an activity for him too. And he seemed to have a really good time. So I think I just have to get him more involved in the regular chores, which is what we're doing to survive.
Oh, that is so awesome. I love that. I'm going to have to think about doing that with Frankie and maybe actually Frankie could help me get motivated to clean the house more too.
Let me know how it goes. They love the vacuum, although Stuart used to be scared of it when he was younger. It was too loud, but test it out. You know, it can work out. There's still, you can still dust and sweep and all of that. So... And
Love it.
Thank you. I know you're doing a great job, but do you have a mama mess up for this past week?
Yeah, I mean, especially kind of related to just how life is different right now when we're still dealing with this pandemic. My mess up is, close to our house, we have a park that we would usually go to with the playground. Of course, that's closed, but there's also a field right next to it. So we've been taking Frankie. We have a little soccer ball. We've been, kicking around the ball. It's been fun and she's had a great time there. Unfortunately, I made the mistake the other day of using the word park instead of calling it the field. So she got in her head the idea that we were going to the park, we were going to the playground. And she was pretty upset that we couldn't go. Aww. And so I made a note that, okay, I'm not going to use that word anymore and get her hopes up and have her let down. So again, a nice learning opportunity and a bit of a mess up for me.
Oh, it's totally understandable. We're used to saying those words without having to deal with the ramifications. So poor Frankie, I'm sure it broke her heart and they just don't understand at this age. But you're still doing a great job. Exactly. You took her to the field to burn off some energy. So
thanks.
Good job.
And she hasn't kept it against me or anything. She hasn't held it against me. So,
oh, that's good. I know that's the great thing about kids, right? They don't hold a grudge.
Yeah, love it.
And Tony, what's your mama must have of the week?
Well, you know, talking about periods, talking about menstrual cups, definitely my mama must have for the past, I think we're going on 12, 13 years, is the Diva Cup. That's been my favorite menstrual cup. Again, it took a few months for me to really get a hang of it, but I could not go back to using tampons and pads. I loved the Diva Cup. And it's just been so handy and again, saved money over the past few years. So I love it. How about you, Lisa?
Yeah, well, yeah, I love the Diva Cup too. I think I was a bit late to the game. It might have been 10 years ago. But yeah, that's a really good one, time. Tony. Yeah, yeah. So that's a great one. But for me, I guess I'm going to admit my reality TV, I wouldn't say addiction. I probably watch like half an hour to an hour a day of reality TV. So right now I've been watching Four Weddings, Seeking Sister Wife. So the cheesier, the better. It's just a nice escape for me. I feel like I just need something to turn my brain off right before I go to bed. So I'll watch a little bit of TV. Poor Pete, because he loves a lot of other shows, but sometimes he'll watch a little bit with me and then he gets to watch what he wants because I go to bed earlier and I'll read for a bit and do a meditation. But it's just a great way for me to kind of zone out and just see, you know, normal life going on. Well, I don't know if it's real, but you know, normal activities anyway. So that's my mama must have of the week. And I heard there's a reality TV channel called Hey You, H-A-Y-U. So I think we might have to get it.
Oh my goodness, I might be with you there because yeah, I definitely have some tendencies towards reality TV. And I mean, I recently was obsessed with Love is Blind on Netflix, and I've been a long time hardcore Survivor fan. I'm still watching Survivor. Some people are like, Survivor is still on? Yes, it is. It's the original and best reality TV show. But anyway, I completely support your reality TV habit, Lisa.
Great. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, no problem.
I was a little bit embarrassed, but I think, you know, it's not a bad addiction to have or mini addiction.
Again, a little bit, not a bad thing.
No, no.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, everyone, thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please, you know, go rate us, leave a review, 5-star review, and, you know, even check out our website as well, perimenopausalmamas.com. That's where all of our show notes for this episode are. So all of the links we've talked about and all the different things, we'll have that all there so you can look that up. If you'd like to ask us questions, comment, you know, connect with us on Instagram and Facebook, and, you know, please, you know, share with your perimenopausal mama friends too.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. Until next time.
Have a great week. Take care.
Take care.